Kia ora and welcome to this episode of Better Off Red. My name's Pip Adam and thank you for tuning in. This is an episode, there's such a great story behind this episode. So in this episode I speak with Rachel O'Neill and we spoke in the kitchen at Randall Cottage, which was really lovely, where Rachel had been in residence. And we spoke a lot about all sorts of different projects and sort of in this vein that I've been speaking to writers about recently, about where they're up to in a project and what the project looks like at this stage. And I've been asking them to bring along an object or something that they've been using in this phase of development of the project. Now, we recorded this a while ago. We recorded it, I think, in October or November last year. And the reason I didn't say this is episode, this originally was going to be episode 133, but it's actually going to end up being 137, which is really, I don't know, like, I love that. I'm very excited because what happened was Rachel and I began a conversation in this podcast around some things to do with like exchange of energy and the things that writers need and the writing career. And we didn't complete that conversation. The recorder cut off. And what's been great is because of that, what would you call it? Like external accident, never an accident, eh? Like because of this sort of an external intervention, it means that Rachel and I have had a much deeper conversation about these things and are sort of talking about better ways to talk about them, more interesting or extended ways to talk about the things that we started talking about. So this podcast is amazing. It's incredible. I am always incredibly grateful to live in the time of Rachel O'Neill. I love Rachel's work. I love their way of being. I like being around them. But I also find it incredibly motivating to speak to Rachel about writing, and especially, you know, at this stage I've been at where I'm like, what is writing and am I a writer and blah, 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 all that sort of jazz. So, this is a magnificent, well, I sound so arrogant. It's such a great conversation. But I mean, Rachel, it's all on Rachel. I really loved recording it. And I guess I'd just say stay tuned and I'll keep you in touch with how we're going to have that conversation. So, just onto the, it's not really an elephant in the room. I always say we, but it's always just me. I have moved the podcast off Substack. I want to thank everyone who supported us at Substack and especially the people that donated financially to the podcast at Substack. I just couldn't really stand it there anymore. I always feel nervous going to a third-party platform and, I just felt quite implicated, and especially seeing people were subscribing and, the content and the hypocrisy around what was being censored and what wasn't being censored there was just a bit much. Now, I know there is no perfect tech company. We'd all be living in utopia if there was. I want to keep making the podcast. So what I have done is that the podcast is now distributed through Podbean, and you can go to pipadam.podbean.co and it will show you how to use an RSS feed to put into your podcasting app. Also, the podcast is available on Spotify and a lot of other podcasting app, so you should be able to get it there. If you have any trouble, just contact me. The email address should be everywhere. I am going to be sending out an email when I publish a podcast, and people are free to subscribe or unsubscribe to that. So that's happening. Everything's kind of separated up, which in some ways, I don't know. I think it makes me feel a little bit better. But, you know, like I say, this is an ongoing thing. Nothing seems perfect. yada yada. You know, like it's difficult to live in the modern world. All the wonderful things that there are about the ability to make these, and then the complications of all the other stuff. The other thing I've done is, obviously, I was incredibly grateful for the financial help. As you know, I like to pay guests that come on the show for their time, and just to acknowledge, you know, that all the time in their practice that they've spent, you know, getting to this point. I have been funding that through myself, and I really love doing that and will continue to do that. However, any piece of financial help is really great. If you did have this magical thing called disposable income, it would be amazing if you could contribute. I have moved to Buy Me a Coffee, which is where I am at the moment. I still feel very nervous about that, of course, but I will put links to that up as well. And if you were willing to donate, that would be amazing. I think I said when I first started this idea of what we're doing, of me trying to re-energize my writing, that I would talk a little bit about where I'm at. And in less than 2 weeks, I finish my full-time job permanently. I do not have another job to go to. I'm going to see if I can be a writer, which is a bit scary. And then in July, I am moving to Christchurch for 6 months to take up a residency at the University of Canterbury down there, which I'm incredibly grateful for, incredibly grateful. So I am going to have around about 5 months of kind of seeing what that looks like. I'm joking with friends that 2024 is my year of bad decisions. I'm quitting my job during a recession, we're not calling it a recession. I think during a time of political fascism absolute attack on everything that is good and lovely. I'm finishing my job. I'm moving cities. I'm doing a lot of things. I'm getting off Substack, which was one of the few places I made money. So all that's happening, and I feel okay. I just had some really nice yogurt, Raglan yogurt. They don't sponsor. If they would like to sponsor, they could sponsor. I'm feeling pretty happy about everything. I'm going to miss the studios at Wellington Access Radio. So things may sound a little different soon, but you never know. Maybe I'll be able to set my little place upstairs up. Anyway, I am babbling, and you want to listen to Rachel O'Neill. I want to listen to Rachel O'Neill. So shall we listen to Rachel O'Neill? Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Cheers.
Kia ora, Rachel. How are you?
Kia ora, Pip. I think I say this every time. I'm well.
Oh my god, I love it. I don't know, like, it's nice to be well. I promise I wouldn't try and interview if you were sick of bed. I'm like, how are you?
Yeah. Not good. It takes us an hour to figure out that there's something else going on.
Yes, so good. Well, I'm glad you're well. I'm also well, and thank you so much for having us in this amazing building. Do you want to describe where we are? It's kind of exciting.
Absolutely. So it's a pleasure having you in the kitchen of Randall Cottage, which is the historic writer's residency in Thorndon in Wellington. And the original little workers' cottage was built in 1867 by a bricklayer and a music teacher. And they had 10 children, and slowly added little wings onto the cottage. And then it fell into disrepair, and then two of their ancestors, the Randalls, amazingly purchased the house and repaired it, and then gifted it to the Randall Cottage Writers Trust is a residency for writers.
Yeah. It's really incredible to be here. I think, I can remember being here once before, and it was when Tina Makaditi was here, and I think Lawrence Patchett was with her, and we had a really lovely afternoon just out there. It was really cool. I think Lawrence Fernley was up from Dunedin, and it was a really lovely day. And you can kind of, I don't know, vibes, but you can kind of feel this is a really working place, eh? Like the fact that it was a working cottage before, and now it feels like it, you know, hums with the work of writing, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely like a writer's infusion and I think it's a great place for hosting people. Like you say, like there's good spots for hanging out, and the kitchen's great especially.
Yeah, it's really lovely. Thank you so much, it's really great. And you've been in residence here for how many months have you been here now?
About 5 months. Awesome. And 1.5 weeks. Yep, so I'm in my last sort of 2.5 weeks.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's really great. Can't wait to talk about what you've been up to while you've been here. I have totally jumped the shark and continued to talk to you without asking you if you'd be willing to introduce yourself, but yeah.
I would be happy to. Kia ora, called Rachel O'Neill Aho. I was born in Tokoroa. And was raised in the Waikato, and have lived mostly in the Wellington region, with a sort of 5-year stint in Auckland, and I am a filmmaker, a writer, and a visual artist, and all of those things sort of blur, but I'm forced to individualize those practices. Because of the various divisions of artistic practice that go on. But for me it's very sort of holistic, I'm just like just like it's like creative ooze or something, like.
Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh, I love it. And yeah, I think it really is interesting, that idea of where the distinctions are made outside of what we make, if you know what I mean. Like, I think that's quite interesting, eh?
Totally. I think it's great to really hold on to your own sense of your creative energies and how you channel them outside of those sort of structures, and to create to develop your own sort of rhythms and practices and just like do your thing.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I really, really love that so much. So in this series I'm sort of talking to artists about where they're up to in a particular project, or increasingly what I'm finding speaking to people is sort of where they're up to in multiple projects. And I just wonder, today, and it's just for today, I always get scared because I'm like, I'm doing this, and then 5 minutes later I'm like, oops. How would you describe where you're up to, however you want to, just that question, where are you up to? How would you describe that at the moment?
Yeah, I love that question, and I love that it's so just centered in the moment. And I love that you're doing this series. Like, I've listened to your most recent interview with Fiti Hiriaka several times, and it's just such an inspiring conversation, and to be able to just delve into the sort of mid process, thinking about you coming today, and it's been quite generative to get my mind in that space. While I've been in residence here, I've been working to finish my third book of poetry, which is a hybrid form narrative poem called Symphony of Queer Errands, and that is about a composer slash sort of producer who is challenged by a non-binary warrior deity recovering from burnout in a beach cave to write a symphony made out of found material. And it explores the composer works with an orchestra of completely invented instruments. And it's a very ribald, very queer orchestra. Mm. So we have like anti-gas lighting bowls. and we have a section of schisms, which are very fun, but very destructive. And there's also this elusive instrument, which is called the queer errand. And it only shows up or comes to rehearsal or the performance if the composition is sort of lives up to its queer radical potential. So there's like a lot of the experience of the poem explores the challenges involved in the dynamics of the individual voice in chorus and when that's sort of slightly exploded, but there are still traces of dysfunctional structures, and that sort of like that work. And I've been beginning work on my fourth collection, which still has prose poetry, mm-hmm. prose poems, mm-hmm. which I'm probably most well known for. And also longer narrative poems. I've got quite interested in, after doing the symphony, which is like hybrid form and narrative. So the narrative poems in the fourth book are more discreet, so not book length, but and I also have some other projects for the year. I'm just finishing the first draft of a feature film, so that has been sort of 2 years of kind of development and research, and just like trying to get that first draft out. I just like to like it's sort of the we can talk about the flow of different projects. But yeah, I feel like different creative experiences, as well as pausing and continuing, it can all be sort of generative and
Oh man, I've got this, my thoughts always get in the road, but it hasn't occurred to me until right now. In all the conversations we've had, sorry to do this, but like I just suddenly realized like a film script is kind of something to almost give instruction to a group of people, like it's kind of like a document for sharing. And then I was thinking about how some of the other writing that we do can be more abstract and can be quite each person might have an individual experience with it. Like it's just occurred to me how productive it must be working on those two forms at once. Like,
yes, a film script, is for the actors and your creative collaborators, and it's sort of like the inspirational document that helps everyone kind of. Hopefully co-create the vision and the collaborative ground for what that experience will become. And in terms of like books and poetry and fiction, I'm very interested in creating experiences. So I do agree that it's people can engage individually at the same time. I think within that what I like is that everyone as you, I think you you said that, but everyone has quite a different experience. So creating, I want to attempt to create an experience, not necessarily that conventional beginning, middle, end process, but that allows sort of, I guess that gives the reader agency to do a little bit of co-creation as well.
Oh my God, I love that so much. Because as you were talking, I was revising my thought and I was thinking that, that this idea of like writing with the anticipation of collaboration is the line that seems to go all the way through every, I don't know, like I always try and, but this idea of writing in anticipation of collaboration is just superb to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a beautiful aim or
I love it. Sorry, now bringing us back.
Yes.
So what I'm asking everyone to do is to bring along an object, physical, virtual, emotional, thoughtful, anything, like however imagined, however you want to do, that is sort of being useful at the moment. So what have you brought to this conversation that you're using at the moment? I hate the word using, but is of use at the moment.
I thought I would bring along something that will kind of be a bit of an experiment in our conversation. It more centers on a sort of ritual or practice I have at the end of the day, just before I go to sleep. And it sort of does relate back into some of the projects that I've been working on and just the general approach to that work, which has been a bit different from what I've done before. So it is, I was finding that I had difficulty waking up in the morning with a positive, energized mindset, or some people might call it like an edge of dread, which may relate, relatable or may not be. So like this year I've been exploring various tactics or practices that might help me create a more satisfying sort of way to start the day. And one thing that I found useful actually was when I queued that up the night before. So I do, and literally just before I go to sleep, I do essentially what is like a body scan that involves reflecting on experiences through the day, and that ends with a question. So I begin the body scan, and it involves a little bit of a gratitude practice. And for me, gratitude's not in that that possessive, what I have and what I have to hold on to, and like it's much more about observation and awareness and like the fleeting attachment, like with less attachment as possible. So I begin with my legs, and I look back on the day and I thank my legs for doing such and such, allowing me to walk down the hill to see my friend, or to go and see that beautiful thing, or just like getting myself around. And then I move on to my arms. And sometimes actually at this point I'm so tired that I actually fall asleep. Which is great. Like, it's great to have a practice that like gets you to sleep. But the real heart of this exercise for me is next I move on to the five senses. So I sort of just am like, smell. What did I smell today that I'm grateful for? What did I see? What did I taste, touch? in here. And this is like, has been really powerful for me, because I begin to remember all the insanely incredible things that have happened during the day that my mind has forgotten, or that other narratives have sort of pushed out. So it feels really great to, you know, to center back in the in those experiences. Then I thank my brain, my supercomputer, my heart, and my digestive system. And at this point, like, I'm feeling quite, generally feeling quite calm and like content, and much less, my mind's a lot less busy. So I ask myself a question, which is, what can I do tomorrow that will make my day better? Or will help my day go better? And sometimes it's simple as like, wake up when my alarm goes off, you know, get out of bed when my alarm goes off. Other times it's like, you know, physically I'm feeling like I might need to go for a walk, or like connect with that person, or yeah, whatever it is. And I sort of just like cue myself up, and I'm sort of like slightly, I don't know what the right word is, but like I've set myself some actions, mm-hmm. and some parameters, and it gives me so it's not like I'm trying to control the day, but yeah, I can sort of launch into it with a few parameters. And yeah, and so I just find that I sleep so much better and I wake up and much more of a positive mindset, that, yeah, I've just found myself practicing this every night. And, yeah, in terms of the projects are very interested in music, sound, and music, sound, the audio imagination, and due to various circumstances, I halfway through my time here at the cottage, I shifted away from the idea of needing to make music, and it became much more about a listening practice, and very, very, very simple being present to a moment. And I ended up, I mean, I've been doing a lot of sort of personal, emotional sort of healing work, I guess, and like thinking quite a lot about what are the questions that structure my mindset, and like, you know, trying to get rid of some of the ones that, you know, come from dysfunctional ones that come from the culture, or like, the, you know, when you're raised, you sort of sometimes inherit a relative's question and you're like, oh my God, I've been like living my whole life asking someone else's question. So I've been very attuned to questions, and this always sounds cheesy when you say these things, but I was just like, I'm interested in making music with less. And then it became about, can I make music from this moment? And that was both like a something that I could practice in a personal sense as a question, and then that also resonated in the projects as well. So yeah, very much about, you just sort of like, what does it mean to be aware in this moment? And I found that very generative, I've just been enjoying exploring and trying to be open and curious about that.
Oh man, I went and spoke to
a EMA group last week, and they were, the theme of it was kind of sustaining a practice. And I should have asked you, I hope it's okay. I took one of your quotes from a chat we'd had on the podcast, and it was this amazing quote about healing. And, you know, and I just thank you so much for being so generous and sharing all that, because I feel like that the quote that I took to them has kind of been sustaining me since we talked last time. And I feel like this is just such a lovely, I never know quite how to say it, but this blending of a life lived in a body and then the artistic project that's being done by that body.
Mm.
And like, I think I feel like there are some ideas of separating those two things, you know, separating the lived experience from the work or whatever. And I just love this idea. And this idea of the question at night, I think, is so useful. I'm a little bit thinking a lot about Jungian stuff at the moment, and that idea of letting the subconscious deal with that overnight and come up with answers overnight seems really interesting to me.
Like, yeah, there's this something on Instagram, I don't know whose post it was, but it's like he was saying that the last 5 minutes of your day are like the most important part of the day. And like, putting that aside, because I'm not like, that's not necessarily something I believe, but he had this other description, is that you marinate in your subconscious mind for 8 hours. And so well, that's full on. But I've also been like slightly side adjacent question, but I've been shifting Foucault's first book was actually exploring dreams.
And really?
And it was this sort of critique of, rather than dreams, it was a conversation with another philosopher, but that dreams don't so much give access to the subconscious, but direct access to the imagination itself. I know. And
oh my Lord.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about that. Like, yeah, it's not just the subconscious, you know, the subconscious being, you know, this sort of hodgepodge of stuff that that is sort of stuck somewhere. But that, the sort of the imagination, which is, to me, seems so much more connected to conceiving alternatives and to the disillusion of self in so many more interesting ways rather than the subconscious sort of like still giving you hints of the somehow organized, centralized self, whereas the imagination's like, dissolve away. I was so excited to be talking to you today, and I just love this. I love what that you value conversation and that you value this kind of sharing of knowledge and connection in the community. I was, it sort of inspired me to think of like four questions. And one was, one of the most powerful questions I've been like, is what do I need? You know? So like, in terms of what sustains us during practice or during the day or through various kinds of experience, and like that, what do I need? Can like help me just separate from habitual narratives or outside conditions or but then I was also like, oh yeah, so then you're like, what do you need? and what do we need? And I just think this is what your podcast does. Like, and I also think there's that last question, which is, what does this need? Which is like, kind of like, what do I need? It hopefully takes us to the place where the, like, the idea of a centralized self, which neuroscience tells us is a complete fantasy as well, as well as spiritual practices and stuff. But like, yeah, so the self asks that question to get to, you know, to support healthy relationships, build trust, co-creation, accountability, and then you get, and then the sort of self sort of dissolves away, and then you've got, yeah, whatever that, everyone has different ideas of what that is, like, but like how every atom is connected to every other atom, you know, forward and backwards through time. You know, everyone has different names for that, like the divine or the
luminous self.
Luminous self, yeah. Yeah. So, this conversation, like, yeah, I just feel like what you do embodies that. And I'm very grateful that I was able to think about that. And yeah.
Oh my gosh, that gave me shivers. Because it's just, I don't know, like, yeah, it is that one, because I feel exactly that. Like, you know, like I sort of started these conversations thinking, what do I need?
Yeah.
And then it's when I'm thinking, what do I need? I'm like, oh, what do you need? And then, like, invariably they come back to, what do we need? And then, yeah exactly like you say, like, it just, the idea of self and, you know, something comes out of there, which is just, yeah, that's, oh my gosh. Ah,
yeah. Oh. And you just like embody that in a really beautiful way. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Oh my gosh. Wow. That was very generous. Thank you. That makes me feel so good. One of the things that I think is interesting as we're talking about these things, and I think that I really relate to what you're saying, and especially around practice, and I just, what I'm sort of asking people about is this idea of work hours, and I just feel like I don't feel that I can separate some actions away from other actions, if you know what I mean. Like, often, you know, like doing the dishes is part of writing, and, you know, walking down, paying the bills is part of writing. I don't know, like, I just feel like they all feel a bit blamanged.
Yes.
But also,
the
blamange, which is life. But also, there need to be some actions that are taken, you know, and not saying that and a physical object or a published thing is the end product.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, if that's going to be the manifestation, then there are some practical things that need to take place. And I just wonder, this work hours kind of thing, like, it sounds like your work day starts with that last reflection, you know, that exercise before you go to bed. And I just wonder instead of asking what you do during the day, I just wonder if you would be willing to talk about your relationship to the writing day, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, I've talked to some people who don't write if they don't feel it. And I've talked to other people who will always write at exactly the same time and stuff like that. And I just wonder, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know. The question isn't very fully formed, but I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about this idea of the work of putting words on paper and editing words and moving them around, but this other massive universe of work that takes place in relation to that. So yeah, I don't know.
That's such a great question. Yeah, I've definitely been giving a lot of thought to that, like what a routine or processes or practices. And
you even use that word ritual, which I think is really interesting, because I feel like more and more that's feeling more like the right word around what I do in certain areas of my life. And yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I interrupted you, but yeah.
I, like, maybe let's start on a practical, relatable thing, which is that I have these contradictions in my personality. So one of them is that I don't like when every day is the same.
Yep.
Like, I, you know, I hate the idea of, like, going into a room and, like, you know, beginning, middle and end But at the same time, I love habits.
Yep.
Love structure. you know, love routine and ritual. And I think, like, it's sort of a bit of a dilation around those things. So practically what I've been experimenting with this year is, like apparently monks divide their day. Like, monks get up super early, which, you know, I'm like, not getting up at 4 a.m. But the first, you know, up until about lunchtime, that's sort of like personal time.
Mm-hmm.
So that can involve like meditation or learning or, you know, teaching or whatever it is. But it's sort of more their time. And then it's like the rest of the day is service. So I've been sort of being like, rather than thinking about strict blocks of time or hours or ratios, I've just been like, okay, there's this portion of the day which is like personal let's call it development, or like maybe like spiritual practice, you know, it's quite like broad activity. It includes, like, sometimes it's reading, learning. Like, I'm super into learning about the science of the mind and the body at the moment, like, because I just sort of realized I had, like, pretty much zero practical knowledge of, like, maybe it's like, I guess it's sort of like queuing me up for a sort of transitionary periods of being present. So part of, like, my projects has involved developing listening practice. And so not just in terms of, like, strictly the ableist sense of sound or hearing, like, it can be like vibration, or it could be... a sense of, like, what is the music of the moment kind of thing.
But then
there's, like, the service part of the day. And, like, I know it's arguable to put writing in the service part of the day, but yeah, like you were saying, writing's not just sitting at a desk writing. It's like all the activity that sort of nourishes, so it can look like various sort of like social activities, or you know, performing your duties in a certain role, or or like earning some money if you need to. Yeah, so anyway, that's a very general outlay of sort of what I've been exploring. Yeah.
I really like the sound of that. And I think I just really relate to that. I've never been able to work that out about myself, is that I really hate things to be the same. And I get quite anxious if things are the same. But in the same vein, if things aren't the same, do you know? Yeah, it's just always interested me, this dichotomy. Like, it just, and sometimes I think to myself, I'll never be happy.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to have periods in the day where you feel quite comfortable.
Yes.
And then periods of the day where, like, you're more open and prepared for discomfort, or, you know, that a bit more like the challenge, where, like, there's sort of like, I'll just leave that there. But
I love it. Yeah. I really, really like that idea. And I think that's why that idea of self and service is quite useful. Because, yeah, I'm sort of thinking, I think I like those distinctions. I think,
I
think they work really well.
You know, just that there's not like a strict hourly schedule how you necessarily have to divide that up.
Yeah.
Do
you like with projects that you're working on, they don't exist at the moment, they don't exist at the moment. do you kind of visualize an end result in any way, or are you very much more in the moment and listening to what it's talking to you about in the moment?
Increasingly over my practice, I have moved to just centering like my value, like values and purpose, and like being clear enough in my mind about what my priorities are, and that's driven by why I'm working on these particular projects. And I very much center, enjoying the process.
Mm.
Yeah. So, like, as we were just talking about, there are, like, practicalities. Like, there might be, like, a deadline, or you may realize that actually having something that you can then share has value, you know, like, and so, you know, to make that commitment to complete a project. So what I do is maybe like twice a year, I will look at what my priority projects are, and I'll think, how can I really enjoy the process of making these works, and very much like connecting it back into where I am in terms of like various kinds of like personal growth stuff. So like some of that stuff can, like in the writing too, it can be very full on. You know, it's like, I think when you were talking with Fitty, it was like, you know, various sort of practices and rituals for like keeping yourself safe as well. But yeah, so I will say this year I was like, okay, I have this residency working on these two book projects. I still have to finish my feature film draft. And I'm like, there's not really any time there. So I was like, and I actually like, I think this is important to say, but I like to finish things before a deadline.
Yeah.
So that then I can have a little celebration.
Yeah, yeah. Completely relate to that.
like you know, finish before the thing. So even if like you spend the day sleeping, like that could totally be your celebration.
Yeah.
Or like to enjoy the party or the dinner, or you know, the little you know, the little pastry you get yourself or something. To do that, then I get very pretty organized. I like do a list, and it has the I guess like the important milestones to complete the work. And then I look at what needs to happen first, and then sort of stack things, and then I'm like, okay, I can, for the feature film, I was like, I actually have 6 weeks now, so I'll just like do as much on the draft as I can, then I will have 6 weeks at some point. I'll probably have to do it outside my hours or whatever, and I try and stack things. Like in film, there's a lot of professional development. So like stacking what I work on to feed into, so this application will feed into that application.
Oh, fantastic.
Will feed into that application. Yeah. So like you're not doubling up on too much. So I guess like, yeah, there's like the scary organization plan, and then it's like, then you can just sort of like Yeah, because I do quite prefer to work more intuitively in the moment.
Mm.
So I want to actually forget all that while still having some anchors that I can... And I think self-trust, part of the organisation is about building self-trust and so even if things don't work out, which they inevitably don't because life's crazy... you have enough of a sense of your practice and process to know that you can rely. I know I can rely on myself, and I think I don't know, maybe we can talk a bit about self-trust, but
I really, I'm so grateful for you describing all that, because, yeah, like I say, sometimes I feel like it is that really, I don't even know how to say it properly, but it's that very tricky thing of letting go of all expectation and almost worldly things. Like, it's exactly the thing. But then, and I don't think I'm overly I do like the idea that I'm working on a project and I'm going to finish the project. And I think this thing you're saying is so great, because I like this idea of the anchors. And then, because I do think I've found that is that if I say to myself, if I do that organization work, and then there's room to, there's room to be a little freer in the moment than perhaps there is if I'm like, I'm just going to let it go. Because the thing is, I'm not that spirit, I will eventually go,
totally. You're like, oh God, I've got 2 weeks.
Oh no, look, it's due in on Thursday and I want my pastry. I do think that is really, it's a very helpful model for me. And again, and I was just thinking as you were talking, in my spiritual practice, there's a line between, letting go and disciplining the self. I don't know a spiritual practice. Oh, maybe there probably are, but been reading quite a lot about sort of shamanic practice, and there's always a structure, and I just think that even with these acts of imagination, I think that structure doesn't need to be the enemy. I guess that's what I'm saying, it doesn't, or I'm calling it structure, but I don't know what you'd call it, but this planning doesn't need to be the enemy of the imagination.
Absolutely. And it's sort of like, it's like where is the what's driving the flow of energy? So it's like shifting away from like these external markers as being the meaningful driver, like such and such deadline, or this kind of even how we're talking about how art forms are unnaturally divided and separated. So it's like just like keeping the projects flowing through the values of sort of like the driving question that in this year I've been kind of centering a bit of like a solitude practice. So like and that is about really trying to listen to really try and listen to what it's so hard to describe, but what really is the driving energy or question here, and then if you can kind of keep listening and keep building on that, it's like not it's sort of like shutting off the noise. And one thing I'm quite resistant to these days is like busyness. There's a lot of pressure to be busy, and sometimes I'll catch myself being like, I've got all these things coming up. I've got to raise my energy level and I've like got to join the busyness flow. But like, I'll try and catch myself now and I'm like, no, I can just hold that line, make a bit of a practical plan, like keep hold of what I'm really focused and prioritized on. And I think that you can center like the intuitive and the imagination and like all the things capitalism has no real interest in. But it's sort of like practicing and listening and
Because, well, I mean, this is completely selfish, what do I need kind of stuff, but like, not that that's selfish actually.
No, because I think you have like there's a beginning there that allows you to open up to have the presence to open up to others and to open up to whatever's bigger than all of us.
And I think, because what I'm thinking about and what's making me feel incredibly hopeful and happy is that what you're describing as well feels like it can be malleable and flexible around the things that I don't have control over, if you know what I mean.
Totally.
Like it does, it feels like capitalism, you mentioned capitalism.
Yeah, yeah.
just that idea that, you know, like, you know, the need to put food on the table and those kind of things, and like it feels incredibly I don't want to use the word practical, but doable and like flexible around those things, if you know what I mean. Like, and much more intentional. Like, it feels like decisions are not, because that's what I'm finding more and more, which surprises me, is I always thought that I would need to, I just find that there is space in the moment, no matter what's going on, to think, you know, like, to ask questions and think about the next move. And I don't know, like, it gives me a lot of hope to think, that this, you know, this idea of, you know, the big question, you know, the driving question and where it's going energetically and stuff like that, I think is actually very hopeful.
Yeah. Totally. I just found that beautiful.
Yeah. I just this idea. Cause I think often I get, I have these aspirations.
Yeah.
And I think I think again, it's that weird boxing off that I do between the divine and the worldly, if you know what I mean. I'm like, work is like this, and then I need moments to be somewhere special, you know, with something special going on, so that I can suddenly, whoa. But I mean, I really, and I think, you know, I'm definitely projecting some of my own stuff on this, you know, like, you know, this idea that the barriers in my path can be, you know, I can take them into my meditation, I can bring them into meditation and into spiritual practice as well, which I think is really, really interesting.
Yeah, that really resonates, particularly when things go to shit.
Because
inevitably, that, you know, challenges and complications arise. So, in those moments, like, that's where you're like, okay, what? And I'm not saying it's defined by the story you're telling yourself. However, when you really think sometimes about how am I perceiving this situation and how is that perpetuating the stuckness, I love what you said about feeling like you have that space or that pause or that, and I think that's like, that's sort of like the self-trust, like it's like being able to sit between like longing and projected hopes and desires, and some of those can be quite collaborative and collective as well. It's not just necessarily individualistic, but it's like being a person, being a human being with longing and then also kind of like being accountable to that. So it's like, okay, in this moment, I have this resource, or I could do this one thing slightly differently. And it's not taking me straight to, like, you know, the gold the end, projected end of the longing. But it's just that pause or breathing room, that sort of faith, that trust. You don't have to dismiss that we all have hopes and desires, and you know, and our little ego does need to have a little party every now and then. But you can also be like, I'm being like super humbled in this moment. I want to be open to what I can learn.
Yeah, I really love that idea of self-trust, because I think it is one of those, like, being totally ridiculous about it, but it is, yeah, I just keep thinking, I've been reading a lot of management texts, and I think, cool. You know, it's a similar kind of thing, you know, like with writing, there's no one waiting for it. Well, in my life, there's no one waiting for it. There's no one saying, oh, Pip, now have you met that deadline or your key deliverable or that kind of stuff. Totally. This sort of almost like trust in yourself, you know, is quite, you know, and this thing, I love what you're saying, like this thing of like, rather than judging, just observing, you know, like, oh, this is interesting that I'm feeling this way, and, you know, like, what's going on here, and, you know, those kind of things. Like, I really love the idea that they can be a part of it as well.
Yeah, and that one develops one's own set of practices, that before sleep ritual thing is, like, not necessarily going to be useful for everyone, but, you know, like, I just hope to encourage people to, you know, to develop and explore and be curious about the practices that, you might be able to add to your toolkit. And personally, like, these sort of practices are because at the moment I can't afford therapy. So I'm sort of like between, you know, and so I'm like, you know, I want to do as much as I can to, you know, to be, the support that I need. And maybe to hopefully prepare a little bit for when that is possible.
I love that. I really love it. I keep looking out the window at that magnificent green tree out there, and I just the works that you're doing at the moment, most of them were started in another physical environment.
Yes.
And then they have been worked on in this physical environment. And you sent, I've got to read this incredible piece of writing that you sent, which is called Soul to Body. And that sort of feels of this area and that the artwork that it's about is, you know, probably in walking distance from here. And I just wonder what, like, so much of what we've been talking about is kind of like, like response to sensory information, response to, like different places to be in. And I wonder what it's been like shifting those projects from one place to this place.
It's definitely a great opportunity in a residency to situate yourself and be very present to the different context you know, part of my daily routine is that I like to go for a long walk and, you know, the botanic gardens are very close. And, you know, I just like, you know, kind of like a mobile tree. I like for an hour a day, and I'm sure all the other trees feel very they pity me because they're like, you know, she can't even like, you know, stay in one place. She's got like those funny corks on their roots. But you know, the Thorndon and this area is also got a very, you know, there's like a mass grave, yep, not far, you know, the Bolton Street Cemetery when they put the motorway through. 3,700 people were disinterred into it. There's like, you know, colonial bureaucrat monuments, and there's you know, lots of colonial houses with heritage status. So it's like, you know, it's quite a loaded context as well. So I have like been present with the peace and the beauty of the area, as well as trying to be mindful of the layered context. And in my film practice, I often explore, because I work on historical dramas, the sort of colonial roots of dysfunction in Pākehā culture. And while that, you know, is kind of present in some of those things I just mentioned, I have also been with the listening practice is trying to be very present, and kind of like that there is powerful energy in being present in the moment. It's a long narrative poem that I sent you called Soul to Body, and it is inspired by the Mary Louise Brown sculpture in the Botanic Gardens. And her sculpture is called Body to Soul. And I've got a little byline on the poem, which is the devotional papers of the Hopeful Eight. And I found myself working on what I call shape poems, so very much where the words and the letters and how they use the space of the page kind of create an experience for the reader that is removed from like the sentence paragraph sort of structure. And these pieces were much more light than my usual work, which is usually like borderline horror. and you know, I like dark humor, and so rather than, I guess, sort of starting from that place, I was just like, oh yeah, I really want to honor this this parts of things that I've been experiencing, which is like states of being more, feeling more playful and embracing like this performativity on the page, and almost like a, so that, I'll try and describe the structure, what the piece is. It's sort of about a person who starts to be sort of hunted or pursued by memoirs and they keep reproducing and then there's like arguments around, you know, which is the sort of authentic sort of diatribe of self, and but this is all just a precursor to like a sense of like a dissolving identity or a dissolution of self that you know, when you experience that as a person, you know, it's very, there's many complicated things going on, but there can be this sense of freedom or agency, or the sense of like, oh, I feel more at home in myself or in the world, or and so I just wanted to honor that. And so there's actually this the shape poems perform a little performance between these sort of like strange, slightly diaphanous entities that in the body to soul sculpture in the gardens. It's a granite staircase, or polished stone staircase, and between the words body and soul, soul at the top and body at the bottom, there are 8 words, and I'll just read them out. So there's bond, so it goes body, bond, bony, seer, seer, seed, send, sour, and sore. So yeah, these little sort of like entities are sort of put on this sort of like pantomime performance for this person who's sort of worked through some of their like shadow self experiences. And usually in life we don't get a like celebration for that work, and like no one's like, you know, giving us a prize or, you know, you're like, so I just wanted to honor that, and so the protagonists, some of their ancestral matriarchs organize this sort of little performance, and it's very playful. And I was inspired by a series of films, and one is Hirozoku Koreeda's Afterlife, which is this beautiful film about a series of characters in a sort of limbo land who help souls transition in the afterlife. And it's set in this sort of former kind of high school. And the way you help souls transition or move on is that you re-perform the most beautiful memory of their life.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so this group of people support the souls to stage a little performance of their most beautiful memory. And in the film, they're so moving and so beautiful. And I was sort of like channeling that a bit. And there's also Edson Oda recently had a beautiful film called 9 Days, which is similarly about spiritual bureaucrats who they interview souls to have an embodied life. There's a very beautiful film. And then because I'm like into the like dark humor horror, I couldn't help but like kind of do a slight pastiche of Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight. So yeah, in the poem, like these little performing blots become like the Hopeful Eight, because they're all like, yeah, we want to like join the embodied whatever this thing is. The little white blot soul-y things do this kind of amateur theater sort of pastiche pantomime of the mystery thriller end scene of the Hateful Eight. I have no idea whether that actually encapsulates what this is.
It really does. And like, I just find it so interesting because like, I think I was going for that low hanging fruit of shape equals collage, you know, like I was doing that. I was going for that very low hanging fruit of, because, you know, like, oh, Rachel makes amazing collage. This is, you know, putting words in this way on the page is also a visual art. But I think it has so much more I think that the reading that I'm liking even better is this idea that it is closer to performance or noise or song, or do you know what I mean? Like it has a rhythm on the page because of the white space. And you know, that there's a narrative going on that is
kind of spatial rather than sort of content wise, which I think is really interesting with it. I really loved it. And free association, but like that, those stairs, like when Bo was a small boy, it was one of those sculptures that was a playful thing, if you know what I mean. Like, like, you know, when we used to go there and he would jump up and down them, and I think when he started learning how to read, he'd find it hilarious to, you know, go back and forth.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, no, it's
soul, buddy, buddy, soul.
Yeah, you know, totally.
And, like, it was just, and I just think it's so, yeah, I don't know, like, I feel like it just, I don't know, yeah, I don't know, there just seems something so special. And this idea of, you know, competing selves, I find, well, that's sort of not what it's about. It's about, like, competing memoir, but, you know, these different stories we tell about ourselves, I think is so interesting that they're part of that. It's just so magnificent. Like, I'm so grateful you let me read it. Like,
oh, thank you.
I was hanging out for something. You know that thing sometimes I read for a while and I don't feel full? And then, you know, I got this and I was just like, oh, you know, I didn't know I needed this, and this is exactly what I needed. Yeah, it's just fantastic. I really love it.
Oh, thank you, Pip. And so that's such a beautiful story about Bo and the sculpture. And it is a great work to be inspired by, just in the sense of like body to soul, like what is that space and that gap, and so it was really exciting just to sort of like dive in there and
and it's the interesting thing, isn't it, like how I was just thinking, oh sorry, this is going on a complete tangent, but I was thinking about the different ways we are allowed to be in physical relation to art, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Like, I was also remembering another time where Bo ran into the City Gallery and I was running behind him, and there was something beautiful and big and shiny, and everyone was like, ah, stop the small child, whereas, you know, up there that it's left to the elements, it lasts beautifully in the elements. I'm sure it's, you know, preserved well by the people that look after the place, but you know what I mean, like, it's, you know, I've seen people sitting on it, I've seen people, you know, and it just, I don't know, there's something really interesting about those different ways we're allowed to be with art, kind of. Yeah,
absolutely. It's great to be able to interact, and it has that physicality, and then it has that sort of poetic cerebral.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, maybe if you're like 5 years old, you're like, what are these, like, marks? it is a very sort of poetic, but also, yeah, it's very open and generous,
And just, like, all, I don't know, like, the minute you start thinking about it, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just and there's pilgrimages, and there's this, and that. Yeah, it's just fantastic. One of the questions that I'm asking a few people, and you've already answered it so well, but I just, you know, because I sent it to you, I want to ask it. I think you've already answered it, but just this idea of holding more than one project at once, like, and, you know, maybe going back to that original thought of kind of the delineation of the projects and some of the useful things you find about delineating them, maybe. We've talked about some of the external things that are not useful, but I do wonder if, you know, are there some useful things of saying, this is this work, this is this work, and this is this work, do you think?
Good question. I think... like, there are definitely times in a project, I think maybe Fitty talked about this as well, where it feels a bit hard, or you get a bit lost, or like all the external demands of getting from A to D. and so just going back to why you embarked on it in the first place. And sometimes I'll reread like a very early document, and it'll be like, oh yeah, that's the spirit and the seed of the idea. And like I think like the sense of like honoring and being like accountable to the seed, and also like that sometimes like you can't crush the seed and help it grow on your own, like, you know, you have that responsibility to like to get that outside support or to take it through those next steps. So I think that helps one, like, because sometimes with long form projects, you know, it might be anywhere from 2 to 10 years, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think having those things that you can sort of like that are like your lodestones. Mm. I think very much thinking about if you're required to do something external that perhaps doesn't have as much value to you, giving thought to how could I make this this requirement meaningful for me and my process, I guess just taking a bit of ownership over I want to go from here to there. I'm going to need this help and these resources. Mm. Going back to like how you make something determines what it becomes. And sometimes I will not put out work because it's not right to where I'm at in the process, I feel like I need more time to explore, you know, who needs to be involved in the crushing of the seed. Because that is, you know, is what the work is. It's like it is those relationships, and it connects to, you know, why you've sort of set out to do that work. So I think being unafraid to go at your own pace and trust your own instincts, and it's like protecting what needs to be protected, and trusting the process.
I really love that. I really like that idea of earlier documents, and this is what I'm about to say, it sounds terrible. No, actually, I don't know if it does, but I think this is one of the bonuses of applying for grants.
Yes.
Like, is that or applying for residencies or applying for anything, is that it is a really beautiful moment to try and cement those ideas of, you know, like, even, like, I know a lot of people have trouble, well, I do as well, probably, with the structure of, say, a CNZ application. But that question of what and how are extremely useful to a project. And I have, you know, dozens of project applications that didn't make it but are extremely useful later down the track. Because I think I do... there are some baubles that I'll think, oh, you know, ooh, you know, like, oh, you know, like this. And, you know, like, I think my ego gets in the road because I see... maybe writing having success, and I could think, oh, I could turn this into that, or, you know, something like that. And I think that those project grant applications are things that I might not have written otherwise. And I think that it's something to tell myself that maybe those are extremely useful to do once in a while, just to get back to that. Or, yeah.
I agree. And like, it can be very daunting to be like, oh God, I've got like 6 applications for this project this year. However, if you're able to like keep refining the project proposals or explore the idea through these different formats, ultimately, like, sometimes I'm like, my first application, this is amazing, yeah. like locked in, like, and then like, you know, you reread for the next application, like, oh yeah, there's some things to work on yeah. there.
Did I really think that? Yeah. I just recently did that actually, where I was like, oh, I've already got one done for this project, and I looked at it and I was like, I thought, what? And you know, it's been quite cool because not only have I moved on, but things in the world have moved on as well. So it's kind of, I don't know, like, it was a really interesting thing to just think. Because like you, when I put that first application in, I was like, oh, this is primo.
I know.
Like, this will never change.
Hot off the press.
Yeah,
hot off the press. Immaculate conception.
Everyone is so lucky to read this. But yeah, it's quite wild. We're almost...
Oh, yes. Can I say... Yes. It was just that the other side of the application process is that there is inevitably lots of disappointments.
Yes, yeah.
So for every yes, there might be 10 or 20 no's.
Yeah.
So I think if you value the refining of your project and the idea and strengthening, using it as an opportunity to strengthen step by step, you know, you're really honoring the work. And even when you get those no's, you're like, no, no, yes, I'm you know, being a good guide to the project. And I think it helps not to take the no's personally as well.
Yeah,
like there are so many variables and circumstances, and yeah, but if you're a good guardian of the project, then that's you, just your job, really. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, try of course, always try, but yeah.
I really like that, because again, it comes back to that kind of energetic flow.